I definitely, personally, am not in favor of swingers clubs, and I'm disturbed that such things should go on. But I'm not sure, like, that's what makes, freedom of action, freedom of speech, freedom of rights is important to us as well. Again, the Green Party will go to the roots of problems. Why do we have this kind of thing going on in society? Maybe we need to go back to, again, to maybe some base, principles, ethics, morals, and why are we losing them and how can we get them back?
I'd like to say something about judicial activism. I got a PhD 70 years ago, and I've studied this kind of question for seven decades. This is a thing, this phrase comes out of the United States, I hope you know that. And they yak down there because any time a judge doesn't do what the extreme right wants it to do, and they try, and under Bush and Reagan and the others, they put the judges way over on the right. They call it judicial activism. Don't you know that all democracies have to have an elected House
and judges? Could you please pass the mic on to Michael?
Judges.
Thank you.
I don't really agree with the age of consent having been brought down to 14. I don't agree with swingers clubs. I tend to agree with what Melanie said there about the Supreme Court. We've got to, there's the implication by some people that it's party appointed. It's not really. If I'm sure Rick would be able to verify that to me as well, that under Mr. Mulroney, who many people had concerns or issues with as well, he actually put in place a system of that was that went beyond the old-fashioned thing of appointing just because they were friends of yours. So those judges are all appointed in a very thorough fashion. It's for their abilities and hopefully the objectivity that they bring to the job.
Hear, hear. We've got a clause in our policy. I'll read to you, but Mark mentioned the age of consent, and Michael, I'm sorry to say that I tried to raise age of consent in the House of Commons with a private member's bill and to raise it from 14 to 16 years, and the government voted it down. So hopefully, if we get to be government, that we can change that. But Parliament and the courts. A Conservative government will ensure that Parliament is a lawmaking body of Canada rather than abdicating responsibility to the courts. A Conservative government will establish a judicial review committee of Parliament to prepare an appropriate response to those court decisions which Parliament believes should be addressed through legislation. Thank you.
Okay, Rick, as long as you have the microphone in hand, it's your turn.
Well, I was going to ask this of Andrea, but she's been pretty busy. So I'm going to ask it of her and Mark and anybody else if there's time that can answer this. Recently on the televised national debates, the Green Party, who's running a candidate in every riding in this country, was excluded. And in their place was a separatist party from Quebec that runs candidates in one province and has no hope of ever forming a government, has no issues other than getting everything they can for Quebec. I think that's wrong. I think that and the Christian Heritage Party as well, they don't run 308 candidates, but they certainly have a presence. All the candidates here have something to offer to this debate, and it adds to the mix, and it helps Canadians decide. But I'd just like to have Andrea, if she's talked to her head office or her leader, exactly what the feeling is from the Green Party and what we can do, maybe as other parties, to help the Green Party, if they are going to run 308 candidates. I do believe they should be taking part in the national debates. However, do you add them to the present mix, or do you eliminate Quebec? Not Quebec, eliminate the separatists. Just rewind there for a minute. I'd like to mention before I pass off that one of the marvelous things that's happening in this campaign is the record high levels of support in Quebec for the separatists is in a nosedive, and ladies and gentlemen, I don't care who wins this thing, but that's important to this country.
I really appreciate you bringing that up, because we have the last federal election, as you know, we fought that tooth and nail, and we're really wondering, you know, what kind of country are we living in? Certainly not, you know, democracy, or we feel like we're in a socialist state, to be honest with you, a communist state. This election, again, Rick Harris was allowed some television time in other ways, and he did take advantage to say, you know, that the media was not including us, and they took offense to that, of course. We had, petitions on the internet asking everybody to, you know, to make a petition. We have tried very hard to fight them on our own, and it is disappointing that, you know, the media in this country is so biased, and it's really hard. How do you get the truth when the media in the country can't even trust them to get us the absolute black and white truth out there? I also felt exactly like you said, and I was just shaking my head. How does, you know, this separatist leader get to stand there and, you know, with people trying to go for the prime ministership, he can't, you know, like you said, he can't be a prime minister. Why in heaven's name, you know, can't somebody figure out, you know, he shouldn't be there, the Green Party should have been there, and, you know, again, Mark's party should have been there as well. Any party that has a significant amount of candidates should have been there, I would think.
I guess this isn't something the CHP has thought about deeply, since we really didn't expect to be invited. The sheer logistical problems would be difficult. There's 15 parties running across Canada in this election that are fielding candidates. Getting 15 people onto one stage, somewhere where the TV cameras can watch them, and the interplay between them is intelligible, I don't think is possible. That said, there have been a number of proposals, either one debate for the major parties, define that however you will, one debate for the minor parties, because I think that, and this is a point I made last night as well, all of these parties that are running have valuable platforms that the main parties don't bring up, and they need to be brought up if democracy is to be revived in Canada. So something needs to be done. I'm sorry, Rick, I don't have a ready-made plan for you.
Rick, you have another minute or so.
Well, I'd just like to maybe further comment a little bit, maybe not a question to everybody, but when Mark asked his question, he mentioned some of the moral issues in this country. Now, we've dealt with the definition of marriage, and our leaders said when we form government, we will have a free vote in the House of Commons. The Conservative Party will have a free vote in the House of Commons on the definition of marriage. And if that vote, to return it to the traditional definition of marriage of a man and a woman, if that vote passes, then legislation will be brought forward. The issue on swingers clubs, you know, behind closed doors, adults consenting, that's one thing. But when we talk, let's go to the next step, and we talk about the age of consent being 14. There was a case in Ottawa where a man came all the way from Texas to Ottawa, met a 14-year-old boy in a hotel room, and molested that young man and took pictures of him. They charged him with 14 counts of criminal code violation. They dropped 12 of them, I believe, and left two. That boy's mother phoned me one morning because she knew my bill. And she was distraught. She's a lawyer in Ottawa. I don't know her name. But her son is suicidal. And this gentleman came all the way from Texas to molest that child. And when he left Canada, he paid with time served, and he was going to have more punishment when he got back to Texas than our country was able to put on him. And that's wrong.
Michael, you have the next 5 minutes.
Mr. Kasson, this is to you, and since the Conservatives seem to make such a big issue about integrity, are we to believe this past week when there's a big boo-boo made with respect to statements about the tax cuts, how are we to take it?
Can you explain a little bit more what you mean by the boo-boo about
well,
tax?
Mr. Harper said that his plan was endorsed by several leading people from the Conference Board of Canada, etc., and some of the banks. And some of those people over the weekend made it quite clear that some things had crept in to the tune of, it's debated between $23 and $26 billion in cost. So I'm just wondering where that is at, if something has been resolved about it.
Well, we did run our platform past the Conference Board of Canada, and they indicated that it was viable for all the years that we had projected for the next 5 years. But one thing we haven't been able to get is the Liberal Party to do the same thing with their platform. Now, there was some discussion of what was in, what was out. I have the figures in front of me as to what we used for numbers as far as the revenue projections, program spending, debt servicing, and then debt repayment. And the room left in the surpluses, even with, and ladies and gentlemen, there has been quite a campaign of rolling things out, particularly from our party. People wanted to know who we were, what we believed in, and what we were going to do. So we started from day one almost, rolling out our platform almost day after day, kept the other parties responding to what we were doing. But we have left $22 billion worth of room in the forecast. We've lowballed the revenues. We've maintained the program spending very accurately from what we could provide. The discrepancy, I think, is debatable, whether it is that much or not. We maintained that we're going to have balanced budget legislation. There's only two departments of the government that won't be limited to increases based on inflation and population increase. And those two departments are the military and Aboriginal Affairs. We feel that there's some special need there. But all other departments are going to be mandated to stay within those growth parameters, because what we've seen in the past is spending has outstripped growth by many times. And you cannot continue that without having some problems. But even with all the things that we want to do, and paying down the debt to some degree, servicing the debt, being very judicious in the projections for revenue, we still have the money left over. We want to address the fiscal imbalance. Now, we've got to sit down with the provinces and figure out exactly how that's going to be done. We think it's through tax room, leaving tax room with the provinces, and we'll just vacate that area and let them have at that that area of the tax system.
Rick, I'm going to give Michael an opportunity respond to what you've said, if you'd like to, or ask a further question.
But, you know, okay, if I can just finish. We said that we would be dealing with the fiscal imbalance and the guaranteed wait times, and we will, because we've left prudence in the budget with the surpluses that will accumulate over the next few years.
Thank you, Rick. Just to correct you there in a statement you made a little earlier about the Liberals have not had their plan endorsed. It's been endorsed by a group of 15 people here, from Don Drummond of the TD Group, Rick Eggleton, the Bank of Montreal, the CIBC, the National Bank, Financial Credit Union Central of BC, Desjardins, RBC, Scotia Economics, Global Insight, Center for Spatial Economics, Academic Institutions, Conference Board of Canada, University of Toronto, and University of Alberta.
Is this the platform that the Liberals have rolled out over the last 58 days or 50 days? Because I wasn't aware that was done. If it's done, great. I'd like to see the numbers, and if they are quantified, then I'll eat my words.
The Liberal approach to economic forecasting does not rest on the views of a single economist or organization. The Liberal government has opened up the forecasting process, uses the consensus forecast of a group of people. So, and this was dated January 16th.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
What's the rule? Can I get in on
this? Howard, it's now your turn to ask a question. So you have the next 5 minutes.
Has it expired on this one?
Yes, it has. If you want to, you can use some of your 5 minutes to comment on it, but it's your opportunity now to ask a question.
Well, I'll say for the audience that Rick Caston has an advantage because he's been in Parliament, and Michael has an advantage because he too has a monstrous organization back there feeding him all kinds of information. These people are probably as bright or brighter than these two. It won't take them long in Ottawa to find out the kind of things that you hear so smoothly said on my right. Now what am I supposed to do?
Now you may ask a question of one or more candidates.
I want, Rick made a statement that becomes ridiculous if you know something about the United States. Mostly, we have better values than the U.S. does, and I say that though I spent about half my life down there. But I've studied them both very carefully. He was talking about federal versus provincial in terms of resources and probably even handling child care and health and all kinds of other things. Hey, do you know that in the United States they never argue about federal versus state? Did you know that? They've got it settled. I was in the U.S. Department of Agriculture. A friend of mine was with me at Graduate School of Minnesota and followed me into Washington, and he was chief of the Bureau of Land Management. The U.S. Interior Department has Park Service, Fish and Wildlife, Land Management, Indian Bureau, and Reclamation. Stoddard, my friend, had the Bureau of Land Management. It has more land than Alberta and Saskatchewan put together, federal lands. They never argue about federal versus state. They let every state do as well as they can, and they take examples from it and use them. We act like the federal government. We can't send a bunch of people to Ottawa who have sense enough to figure out the best way to set up a health care system. Come on, ask Red Broadbent and others about that. We can't send anybody in Ottawa to know how to tax natural resources to distribute the... I'm not going to bring Trudeau back alive. He's dead. Rick, it's nonsense to say that there can't be as much wisdom in Ottawa as there is in each province. We get the best from all provinces, don't we? Why can't we have national programs? Why can't Canada mean the best health program in the world, the best treatment of the resources, the best attitude toward Kyoto Agreement, and you missed it on that, I think. What about, Rick?
Howard, are you...
Do you know anything about the U.S. system?
Okay, thank you, Howard.
Well, Howard, I'm not sure if you're indicating all the brains are in Ottawa or in the provinces, but certainly they're in both. And there is a balance of power between the provinces and the federation, and we have to honor that. The U.S. system is quite different, and one of the reasons it is different is they have an equal and elected Senate. And the elected Senate says, elected Senate is something that's on our agenda, and hopefully we can make that happen. But only for seats that come open, Joyce, not for sitting senators. And I know, Joyce, if the opportunity came around, she'd love to take somebody on in a race. Do I have just a second to tell a story about Howard?
Howard, is that all right?
Is that all right, Howard?
Go ahead.
He's been in my office a few times, and one day he came to see me just before lunch, and my two granddaughters were in the office with my wife. And my youngest granddaughter was about 5 or 6 at the time, maybe about 5. And Howard came into my office and sat down. We were having a discussion just like we're having here, but Howard talks loud. And so my granddaughter's out in the other room, and she's listening to this gentleman hollering at me. So she comes sneaking in, and she stood right beside me, and she was standing there glaring at Howard like, "You leave my papa alone." So I had to explain to her that he's a great man, and I sure appreciate him being involved in this. It's adding a lot to it.
We are doing amazingly well. We're actually about 3 minutes ahead of schedule. So we're going to give you 10 minutes now for a break. So feel free to walk around, visit with the candidates, and formulate your questions, because we will have a session afterwards. Oh, and Sue Giffen is waving the basket over there. Just a reminder again, Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs can certainly use your donations. So 10 minutes. have quite a lineup of folks back there. So what I'm going to ask you, those people who are waiting to ask a question, I would like you to identify yourself and where you're from. That is, what community you're from, Lethbridge, McGrath, Raymond, whatever. And keep your questions as brief as you possibly can so we can get as many in as possible. And also, please direct your questions to one, at most two candidates. We simply won't have time for every candidate to answer every question. All right? So, I guess we're probably ready to start.
And we hope this microphone works as well. So we will give this over here to this side of the table.
Hello. My name is June Tagg. I'm from Lethbridge. I'm addressing my question to Melanie Thomas. I'm concerned about health care in Canada, the long waiting lines for operations, the waiting line for hospital beds, the shortage of beds in Canada. I'm told that privatization is the answer in Alberta. I would like to know if this is really what you think needs to be done, and if not, why?
Thank you for your question, June. It's interesting that some people think that privatization is the solution for healthcare, because my mom is a registered nurse. When I was young, she worked in acute care. Now she works in long-term care. And I can tell you from her frontline experience and the frontline experience of nurses like her that privatization is not the answer. We need to stop privatization. Politicians that advocate for private healthcare, politicians like Ralph Klein and Stephen Harper, are really out of touch with Canadians, because Canadians are saying this is not what they want. To deal with wait times, if we can get people through airport security lines quickly with something called queuing theory, we should be able to take the ideas that they know, that they've learned from there, and apply that to healthcare. If wait times aren't increasing, if they're just staying static, 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 8 months, something like that, that means that there once was a backlog, and you need to clear the backlog of cases, and then the system will have the capacity that it needs. Now, in a community like Lethbridge, in the early 1990s, we went from two hospitals with 400 acute care beds to one hospital with 400 acute care beds. So we basically cut our acute care beds in half. We cut our surgical abilities in half, and now we're losing long-term care beds to assisted living. The NDP plan would target federal transfers to communities like Lethbridge through the provinces, with strings attached to that money to ensure that benchmarks are hit, that it's directed to public care, that federal money and that your tax dollars aren't going to private for-profit health care. We'll expand home care, we'll expand long-term care, we'll create a national pharmacare program for catastrophic drug costs, and we need more doctors and nurses, and that's where our post-secondary plan comes in, so that we can train more medical professionals and put them to work in Canada to help with our public health care system. Canadians say they want it, and the NDP's got a plan to do it.
Thank you.
Ted Buchanan is my name.
And you're from where?
And I'm from Lethbridge for 62 years. I would like an answer from all the candidates, because I've just got a quick question here. And one of the things that concerns me is the state of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the CBC. And I'm just afraid if we get too many conservatives in this and that House of Commons, one of the things that they talked about a long time ago was they were going to peddle it off, and I think that would be an absolute travesty for this country if that ever happened.
Okay, we'll give you each 30 seconds if you would like to respond to that question, and our timekeeper here will be very strict. Let's start with Mark.
Yes, I agree. The CBC plays a vital role in maintaining cultural identity of Canadians as Canadians. You all know, of course, living on a continent shared with a superpower, that's difficult enough to do at the best of times. The CBC does a very good job of furthering that goal, and the Christian Heritage Party is in favor of maintaining that.
I'm also very concerned about that. It is one of my pet peeves, I guess, to call it that. I'm very concerned that the CBC be very strong, and I think for They say that, you know, that Canada doesn't have that national unity, that Canadians don't, you know, we say, who are you? Oh, I'm Scottish, I'm German, I'm Irish, I'm Iraqi. Nobody says I'm Canadian anymore. I think the CBC is our first best hope in producing Canada unity, a real Canadian identity. It should be strengthened and supported 100%.
Yes, I agree, CBC, partly because I spend a lot of the time in the States, and partly because I know a lot of the things that we do better than they do. I want to hear more about it. I want other people to hear it. In the States, I used to listen to public broadcasting, PBS, public broadcasting, which is sort of similar. And it's, I think, the very best of the big chains in the United States. So even looking there, the model is, if you can have something that is definitely responsible to the whole nation, and deals with the whole nation, you're going to more likely get people to understand what the nation has and what its good things are.
As you know, in November of 2005, the Liberal government made significant commitments to the arts and arts funding, commitments that were tabled when the government was forced into an early election. On November the 23rd, the Government of Canada made the historic announcement that it will invest $306 million, or $5 per citizen, over the next 3 years, etc. Personally, I have made a commitment that if I get in there, I will be putting in a private member's bill to support the arts, and that means artists and art, the arts in general.
I'll read you directly from our platform, if you don't mind. Conservative government will ensure the CBC and Radio Canada continue to perform the vital role as national public service broadcasters. And that doesn't answer your question, but that's what I have here, and I apologize for that. And preserve the role of the National Film Board, the Canada Council, and the other federal arts and cultural agencies. One of the things, too, that we're going to add to our platform is we're going to support charitable giving. And I think this will help in some of the issues where people are out trying to get support for the arts and culture or any other aspect where...
Well, I'm sorry. That's right. I'm sorry, Melanie.
Well, I'm a Canadian, and I love the CBC. The summer was really hard for me because I was in the United States studying for all of July, and then I came back to Canada, and the CBC lockout happened, and I was in solidarity with the workers, and that meant no CBC, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. The NDP platform will ensure that all Canadian television networks remain Canadian-owned, and we will ensure that the CBC is fully supported with regional programming and the like.
My name is Bill Mayberry. I have a question to Rick Casson. Does your party support doctors working in both the public and private hospitals and or private clinics at the same time?
Okay. Do we support doctors working in private and public clinics at the same time? And I guess that gets to the question of whether public dollars should go into private clinics. We support a mix of public and private service providers on the proviso that healthcare is accessible and it's paid for through the public system. It's accessible to people irregardless of their ability to pay. And the mix that we see, and I think we had a little indication here last week when Jack Layton had gone to a private healthcare and didn't know it. And I believe that he didn't know it. Nonprofit, whatever we call it, nonprofit. Oh, a nonprofit private clinic in comparison. See, this is where I get a little confused. Because one of the questions I was asked, do you support a federal plan to stop public funds from being diverted to for-profit healthcare delivery? And that's this question. We are saying that we need a mix of private and public. Private and public health care. So the answer to that question is we would. We would not stop the money from going to a clinic if a person has to go to that clinic to get repaired or to get service. repaired is a car term, not a person term. But I can't see people suffering. If there's a service available, it can be paid for through the public system. My goodness, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Can I say something?
Questioner, would you...
Can I say something on that one?
Yes, you may, briefly.
There's something sneaky about this. It sounds reasonable to say, well, if somebody needs service and they're willing to pay for it, hey, what happens is the rich people pay the rich doctors and the rest of us don't get as much service, especially the poor people.
Melanie will also make a brief statement.
I would like to set the record straight on something. This came up last night, and it's come out again this evening by both Mark and Mr. Kasson, and I have no doubt that it's no coincidence that both these parties are on the right, but you're trotting my party leader out to make a politically expedient point for you, and you are making it with incorrect facts. Jack Layton was referred to a private clinic by a public doctor. This is indicative of how far privatization has encroached into Canada's healthcare system. This isn't my leader supporting private healthcare. This is a reality of Canada's healthcare system. The NDP believes this needs to be stopped. Because somebody needed healthcare and they needed to go to a private clinic to get it does not mean that they tacitly support private healthcare. This is just the reality of Canada's system as it exists now. I don't make mention about your leaders to make political points, and I would appreciate it if you didn't trot my leader out to make politically expedient points to either.
Okay, next question.
Yes, good evening. My name is Mark Bayrock. I am a Catholic priest. I've been living in Lethbridge for the past 7 years. I have two brief comments to make, and I'd like a reflection response from the candidates Rick Kasson and Melanie Thomas. Any reflection if you could distinguish your personal and your party positions on it. According to the Western Catholic Reporter, which is a Catholic newspaper also on the web based in Edmonton, they suggest that human life and human dignity encounter too many obstacles in Canada. As we prepare to elect a new government, we must determine the position of candidates on the first of all human rights, the right to life. The second comment is close to that, where they state there should be no separation, but instead coherence between our faith and our daily choices made evident in our personal, family, professional, political, and cultural decisions. Your reflection, please.
Rick? Go ahead.
I apologize. I'm not sure that I got the gist of your question.
Did you want to clarify the question,
yes,
please?
Please, I apologize.
Perhaps so, then I'll...
Yeah, it's on.
Just a reflection, with any direction you wish to take your reflection to, but in my last comment I said, quoting from the paper, they said there should be no separation but coherence between our faith and our daily choices, both in the political and professional arena. If you would like to just give a short reflection on that, if there is something from your party you wish to state or from your own personal way of life, that is my question.
Well, if you're talking about issues of moral conscience, we do have a way of dealing with them in our party. And we say, on issues of moral conscience, the Conservative Party acknowledges the diversity of deeply held persons' convictions among individuals, party members, and the right of members of Parliament to adopt positions in consultation with the constituents and to vote freely. Now, my personal opinion, I'm allowed to have that, and I'm allowed to express it. However, on issues of these deep moral conscience, I will endeavor to consult with my riding, and the best way to do that is to do it scientifically, and I'll have a free vote in the House of Commons. My party would not whip me to vote one way or the other. The whole issue of the definition of marriage now is I guess we made it an issue in this campaign because we brought it up on the first day, that we feel that a free vote needs to be held. A free vote was not held the last time by the government, so we want to bring that back. And if it fails, then it's done. But if it passes, then we want to bring legislation forward to address that issue. But I am allowed to have my own personal, and we all do. We all have our own personal beliefs.
Okay, and, thank you.
Okay, sir.
Go with Melanie.
Thank you for your question.
most political parties in the modern world believe in a fairly firm separation of church and state. And as someone who has been politically socialized to the modern world, I definitely would personally adhere to that as well. But you do raise an interesting point in that there is really no separation between our faith and the choices that we make. And so I'm very well aware of the fact that while I am operating in a secular state and running for a political party that is secular and separate in that state, that my own worldview definitely colors the choices that I make. And I have a particular religious worldview that is personal to me and very valuable to me as well. And I usually try to keep that out of overtly out of my my politics. But it's interesting that you mention the right to life, because one of the issues that's very dear to me personally, and also that my party is very good on, is poverty. I cannot abide that 25,000 people today died due to levels of extreme poverty throughout the world. And I feel that we need to do something about that. I take action on this as an individual by openly endorsing the Make Poverty History campaign. That's something I've been very active in since the campaign's launch. That's something that I've endorsed as a political candidate, and it's something that my party is taking action on as well by ensuring that it's a platform point that will bring Canada up to 0.07% of our GDP will go to foreign aid to help alleviate poverty conditions by 2015. That's in our platform, and we're committed to it. Personally, to me, because this blends so well with my own worldview that I have with this, it makes me proud to be a New Democrat. But it's something that I'm very aware of, that while my party is very secular, and operating in a secular state, that my own choices and the way that I see this is colored by my own religious experiences as well.
Thank you, Melanie. Next question. Next question.
This question is for Rick.
Could you identify yourself and where you're from, please?
Maureen Remus from Coaldale, and I'd like to ask Rick Casson, Mark Slingerland, and Melanie Thomas this question. For the record, as far as the right to life goes in our country, 110,000 people every year do not have the right to life. They're killed through abortion, which brings me to my question regarding health care, and more specifically, women's health care. There's mounting research showing the devastating effects of post-abortion stress syndrome on women. That is unresolved grief, depression, substance abuse, suicide, etc. As well, there are over 27 worldwide studies showing a link between breast cancer and abortion. I would like to ask these three candidates what you are going to do to prevent women from suffering the physical and psychological effects of abortion and help those that are already suffering these effects. Thank you.
Which person would you like to start? And we'll give them 30 seconds each.
Melanie Thomas.
Okay. 30 seconds.
The NDP is a pro-choice party, and I'm certain that you're aware of that. It's important to make a distinction between pro-choice and pro-abortion, and the NDP is not pro-abortion. Now, personally, I'm also pro-choice, and I believe that a choice between a rock and a hard place or the frying pan and the fire is no choice at all. We need to have public child care for women to make it easier for them to raise their children on their own. It takes a community to raise a child, and the Canadian community isn't doing terribly good at that at the moment. Post-abortion stress syndrome is a very real disorder, and we do need to provide supports for women going through that. I know women personally who are suffering through that, and we need supports through the healthcare system with that, and we need to acknowledge that that's a reality for women.
Who is the next candidate? Okay, thanks, Mark.
Yeah. I don't know if the order matters. Thank you. I appreciate you bringing that up. The Christian Heritage Party is Canada's only pro-life party. All of our candidates across this country believe in the right to life from conception to natural death. The New Conservative Party has disavowed that platform, which was part of the Reform and Alliance incarnations of themselves. None of the other parties even pretend to take that into consideration. And while, of course, there are difficult choices to be made in an unintended pregnancy, that, as Melanie says, needs to be something with strengthened communities and especially strengthened families, which most of the major parties seem to be chipping away at and which the Christian Heritage Party believes should be strengthened.
Howard, the question was addressed to three people, and because of the number of people we have that wish to ask questions, I think we're just going to have to go with that. Sorry.
Well, from our platform on the issue of abortion, it clearly states the Conservative government will not initiate or support any legislation to regulate abortion. And as far as the effects of abortion on the health system or on individuals, that has to be dealt with as it arises. But Mr. Harper's made it very clear that we will not be bringing forward legislation to deal with abortion.
Next question.
Okay. My question
is... Your name and where you're from, please.
My name is Derek Remus. I'm 16 years old. One-third of my generation, 110,000 babies every year, have been slaughtered in this country through abortion in the name of a false and anarchical freedom called...
Could you get a bit closer to the mic, please? Is this the same question as the one before?
No, it's a bit of a different...
Okay, thank you.
It's similar, but... Should I start over again, or just continue?
Sure.
Okay. I'm 16 years old. One-third of my generation, 110,000 babies every year, have been slaughtered in this country through abortion in the name of a false and an anarchical freedom called woman's choice, which really means the right to murder. So my question to candidates is, what are you going to do to stop doctors from massacring my generation?
Who is this question directed to?
I'll do it to... Okay, sure, you can do it. And...
To who? I'm sorry?
Miss Sheridan. We'll figure it
out. Okay.
And could I also ask it to... Mr. Cormican and Mr.
Forsyth. Okay, that's fine. 30 seconds each.
I appreciate your passion and your concern on this issue. You obviously feel very deeply about it. We live in the Bible Belt here, folks, and most of the time, 95% of the time, that's a very good thing. It's a wonderful thing for our society, but there's times when we really need to separate religion and spirituality. To be a truly spiritual person, you understand that that person did what they needed and they thought that they had to do at that time. If you were them, you would have done that same thing because that's what they did. And that's what's called empathy. We need to please try to keep these issues out of, you know, they're so difficult for us to deal with, out of politics. We need to try to be tolerant and understanding everybody, give them the love, the support they need. Maybe they wouldn't have got to that point in the first place if it had the love and support they needed.
Thank you, Andrea, and thank you, Derek. I feel somewhat similar there. I like to look at the loving side of it, the need to understand people. If we all made a better attempt at understanding each other, some of these things may not occur at all.
And how are those left? Yes, you were asked as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't hear that. You know, right to life. If you spill semen, that's life, isn't it? And what about the population of the Earth? I was born pretty close to 1900. The population of the Earth then was about 1 billion. 1 billion. Now it's 8, and we're going to destroy all life on the planet. And what about the life of the woman involved? I think there's a lot of... I have a piece of paper back there that says I believe in freedom of religion. I go along with a couple of other statements. We should have religion. They should be teaching us morals. But we don't. It's dangerous to have individual religions. I'm a Mormon. It's dangerous.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Matthew Conley.
Could you start again, please? Thanks.
Okay, hello. My name is Matthew Conley, and I'm a grade 10 student at Lethbridge Collegiate Institute. And I'm actually going to change up the theme a little bit here. My question is on national unity. And actually, it's directed at Mr. Kasten and Mrs. Thomas. And first of all, actually, I'm quite relieved to hear, Mr. Kasten, that you're not for eliminating Quebec, which is a good thing. And... And my question is that, under Mulroney, we had the Meech Lake Accord and the Charlottetown Accord, which didn't work. We had, under Kretchen, we had the sponsorship program after the 1965 referendum, which obviously didn't work. And so, what's the new plan for making Quebec feel more a part of Canada and for unifying Canada?
Well, we're well on our way to keep in Quebec and Canada with the results of the polls this last little while. But, you know, we talk about the fiscal imbalance and allowing provinces to have the rights that were given them in the Constitution. And it's not only Quebec, it's all the provinces. But Quebec has, of course, made the biggest issue of it with their separatist parties. But I feel that if we can work with the provinces, Quebec, all provinces, to recognize that they have certain rights and distinctions, that's fine. We have some here. We've got, we're Albertans and we're proud of it, and when we're Canadians as well. But if we recognize a fiscal imbalance throughout the Canada, recognize the Federation of Canada, that the provinces get together and deal with them directly, and deal with all provinces on a basis that respects their rights. I think we've just seen an intrusion over the last few years where the federal government keeps moving in on different areas, and the provinces are being undermined that way. So I think if we tackle it openly and fairly and straightforward, I think we can keep this country together and strengthen the unity.
Melanie?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you for your question, Matthew. And with all due respect to Mr. Casson, I don't think that plan is going to work. I am very worried about the state of national unity. I study campaign finance, and one of my jobs was to go through the Gomery Inquiry and trace the campaign finance strain through all of that. I understand why everybody in Quebec is as angry as they are. I understand why they're voting Bloc, and I know we're going to have another Quebec referendum in between 2 or 3 years. Now, what Quebec has been good at doing in addressing the fiscal imbalance between the federal government and the provinces is that they will take money from the federal government and run a parallel program for whatever social program that they're doing that meets national standards that basically Quebec is in charge of, but they are getting funding from the federal government. So, I mean, we already acknowledge that there's a fiscal imbalance. We already, with Quebec, they're the one province that gets it right, essentially. And more often than not, as an Albertan, I often lament that I wish my province would take a cue from Quebec and do some of the things that they do when, in relation to the Federation. I think we need to kind of openly address what has happened in the past and the kind of hurts that have happened through Meech, through Charlottetown. Quebec is a distinct society, whether we want to admit it out here in the West or not. That's just the reality of it. They're one of the only Francophone, it's this geographically concentrated Francophone-speaking population, and we need to acknowledge what that brings to Canada and what that does. I think if we address the corruption in government, if we actually openly look at Gomery and look at what's really going on and what hasn't changed since Gomery, one of the things that hasn't changed since Gomery is the loophole that allows the directors of businesses to donate individually to a political party and get reimbursed by the company. This was the campaign finance loop that allowed Jean Brault to learn from the separatists and then teach the Liberals how to earn all the money that they did through Quebec, which led to this sponsorship scandal. What we don't have now is the connection between the money and government contracts, but both the Liberals and the Conservatives, based on political science research, are still doing very, very well at getting money from individual business directors, and we don't know if that's being reimbursed by the business or not, but that loophole has not been closed in the new campaign finance legislation.
Okay,
the first
Melanie,
thing I would do
can you wrap
close
it up, please?
That loophole. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next question.
Thank you, Melanie.
Hi, I'm Dorothy McKenna. I'm from the Women's Space Resource Center here in Lethbridge, and I'm one of the women in pink who are here to see that women's issues get on some table somewhere, because generally they don't get onto the federal table at all. My question is for Rick Casson and for Melanie Thomas. It's about daycare. I understand it's been very clear in the Stephen Harper's platform that he intends to give each family $100 a month towards any daycare option that they choose. Now, it sounds to me like giving drivers $100 each and telling them to go build roads. I would like to know how exactly $100 a month is actually going to help families with daycare, which costs between $500 and $800 a month.
I saw a flyer came out the other day from a lobby group that indicated that we should have a daycare spot in Canada for every child in Canada. What on earth would we need a daycare spot for every child in Canada for? Not every child goes to daycare. But I will give you the plan that we have in detail. You're missing out on a couple of points. We'll provide all families with $100 per child under the age of 6. Starting in 2006, and this is in addition to the current Canada Child Tax Benefit, the National Child Benefit Supplement, and the Child Care Expense Deduction. The choice in child care allowance will let parents choose the child care's option they best suits their family needs. And we will help employers and communities create child care spaces in the workplace or through cooperative or community associations by allocating $250 million a year in tax credits to employers who cover the full cost of creating spaces. We will provide similar support to nonprofit associations to create spaces. And this question came up at the university today, and I'm not sure if universities would qualify, but it's sure something they should look into. And we estimate that this program will create 125,000 new childcare spaces over 5 years and make it easier for working people to juggle childcare and work responsibility. The program will be designed to ensure that small business and rural communities will be able to access it as well as large employers and cities. And we will honor the government's existing bilateral childcare commitment for 1 year.
Thank you. Melanie?
Thank you for your question, Dorothy, and thank you for raising women's issues on the political agenda, because they are important issues, and you're right, they have been ignored since the leaders' debate on women's issues in the early 1980s. The NDP has a plan to give parents a real choice on quality childcare by creating a national system of quality childcare and early learning. For women of my generation, it is an economic reality that we will have to work outside the home if we have a family, and if we don't have a family as well. I don't think that I should have to feel guilty about not staying at home with my children if I choose to work, and I think that I ought to have public quality childcare for my children when I choose to have them, to be completely frank. The NDP has advocated for a national childcare program for years, and childcare experts have said and still continue to say that our plan is the best. We will create a Child Care Act to ensure that there is stable funding and quality standards to ensure safe child care for every child care space. We'll give an initial investment of $1.8 billion to create 200 new spaces in a year, and $250 million each year following that to create 25,000 new spaces for the next 3 years. It's important. We need those kind of child care spaces. My supervisor at the University of Calgary has two sons, and she had to, when her maternity leave was up, have to pay for a day home for her youngest son because there was a waiting list for her youngest son to get into the same child care facility on campus with his brother, and it was actually costing her money to go back to work because there were no child care options for her in a city like Calgary. If there aren't child care options in a city of 1 million people, what are rural people supposed to do? We simply don't have the spaces. We need to create the spaces. Initially, we'll help low-income parents by increasing the child tax benefit by $1,000 per child over the scheduled increases, which will directly help low and middle in, low and middle income families and women as well.
Thank you, Melanie. Next question.
My name is Lisa Lambert. I come from Colhurst. I'll make my question very quick, and I'd like answers from Melanie, Michael, and Rick. Given that women constitute 52% of the population, but only 21% of the population in Parliament, what will your government or your party do to increase the number of women that are elected? And secondly, will you support proportional representation and electoral reform in order to make changes to the electoral system that will increase the number of women who get elected?
Okay, we'll start with Melanie, and 30 seconds each on this one.
In a word, yes on both counts. This is what I study. In order to increase women's representation in politics, you need to look at the party. Parties are the gatekeepers to public office, and every party, to be completely frank, but the NDP does absolutely dismally on women's representation. We have rules from four New Democrat election planning committees that they have to conduct a search to find any eligible person who wants to run as a candidate. That means looking for women, looking for people of visible minority, looking for people who typically aren't political candidates. We have the highest number of women running in our candidate slate in this election than any other party in Canadian history, and yes, we will endorse PR.
It's in our platform. Michael?
The Liberal Party did go after and look for women to run in this last election, or in this current election, as they did in the last, and we have several females running throughout the province. I met three or four of them in Calgary when we went to meet the Prime Minister. Also, this is for...
Women's issues?
On women's issues. Mm-hmm. Proportional representation. Certainly I've been told that the party is in much more favorable looking towards the... issue of proportional representation, but that has its issues too, I'm told. BC have looked at, are currently looking at it, and we're told you don't want what's going on in BC, what's proposed there.
Thank you.
You should have asked Howard to answer this question. He's got a great response. He gave it last night. He said women are smarter than men and there should be more of them in Parliament. We believe in an equality of opportunity for all Canadians, and certainly I know that the ladies we have in our caucus are wonderful. Rona Ambrose, a wonderful young lady that works hard. Lynn Yelich that sits on the women's rights or women's rights committee is just doing it, and Deb Gray. But there's nothing in our platform that definitely addresses the question the way you put it. But equality and more opportunity, certainly we need to promote that in any way we can, particularly through the nominations process that we use as parliamentarian, or as we use as parties to screen potential candidates. I think there's an opportunity there.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, my name is Darko Filipic. I'm from Lethbridge.
Could you get closer to the mic, please? Thank you.
As a globally minded Canadian, I want to feel proud of Canada's contribution to the international community and our role in it. However, with the Conservatives wanting to build up our military to be a buddy of the United States and the Liberals continually waffling on our commitments around the world, my question to Rick, Michael, and Melanie is, where does your party stand on the issue of foreign aid, especially with regard to Canada's commitment to give 0.7% of our GDP, which was promised by Pearson in the 70s but has never been realized by any Canadian government since?
Okay, once again, 30 seconds each. And we'll start with Michael this time.
I didn't get time today to look it up, but I remember reading in the paper only a couple of months ago where Canada forgave, I think it was seven were quoted, and there was at least a couple of them African nations, all small nations, their debts. They seem to be working, even though they may not be anywhere near the 0.7% that's quoted. They seem to be working towards that.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I reject the premise that we're building up our military to be friends with the United States. I should show you a email I got from a soldier in Afghanistan today explaining how one of the people in his platoon lost his leg and another gentleman was killed. We have to build up our military so they can go out in the world and do the job that Canadians expect them to do outside of Canada and inside of Canada. We have to equip them, we have to give them the equipment they need, and we have to get from being 35th in the world now in peacekeeping, people. That's where we are in the world. We think we're a peacekeeping nation, but we're 35th in the world behind some really small countries.
Thank you for your question. It's interesting that Mr. Casson used that lead-in because there's a significant difference between investing in military kit and investing in the root causes of things like insurgencies that we see in Afghanistan and Iraq. And one of those root causes is international poverty. The NDP will immediately commit to increase Canada's foreign aid to 0.7% of the GDP by 2015, and we will make this a priority in the next federal budgets to come. You can count on that. The NDP will be working on this. We already got investment for that in the spring budget, and we will continue to do so.
Okay, looking at the clock, I think we will take two more questions, and then we will have the closing statements from the panelists.
My name is Walter Mitson. I've lived in Lethbridge longer than I can remember. I'm concerned with the health care delivery, and I'm addressing this to our MP, Rick Casson. You've already answered it in part. Would you care to expand on whether or not you support a federal plan to stop public funds from being diverted to private for-profit delivery, healthcare delivery? Thank you.
Well, thanks, Dr. Mitson. No, I guess when our platform says that we'll support a mix of private and public, then we do not have a federal plan to stop that from happening. Because if you're going to go into a private clinic and it's going to be funded from the public system, those are public dollars. And that's our platform. That's what we believe would be the best solution to the problems we have in the system today. However, the issue of whether it's private for non-profit or for profit, I think to me is somewhat clouds the issue. If it's available and the public system pays for it, and it's irregardless of a person's individual ability to pay. That, to me, is the key to getting good quality health care.
Last question.
Hi there, my name's Tara. I'm from Lethbridge, Tara Thompson. And my question is for Howard and Melanie. And, well, first I just want to make the statement that it's in regards to employment insurance and parental leave benefits. And I just wanted to say that my husband and I and my family, we live below the poverty line. And $100 a month per child for child care, it's not even going to register on our budget. Keep it. Do something else with it, because $200 a month for child care for our children just isn't going to cut it. It's not going to do anything. And a good daycare, and that's for us, and we're poor. So what's it going to do for other people? Nothing. And a good child care facility provides more than just child care. It provides support for the parents. Like a good child care facility like the YWCA here in Lethbridge provides support for the parents, and it provides a chance for children to socialize. So, Melanie and Howard, I'd like to know how you two feel about providing a more solid form of child care for our children.
Thank you for your question, Tara, and for sharing your experience, because that really is the heart of what we're doing here during election campaigns. Listening to a constituent like you, it's important to me that we follow through with the NDP plan for child care to create quality public child care spaces and early education spaces for children. That the YWCA is already doing this is fantastic, and we need to improve that. You mentioned EI and paternity leave, and the one thing I'd like to touch on with that is that in the current EI program, women can work 40 hours a week full-time, and the program has been amended, and it discriminates against women, so they can't take a full maternity leave on that. For paternity, it's the same way. So we need to reform EI to help women, and we need to create child care spaces to help women and to help families like your own. Thank you for sharing your experience with us.
Quite a lot of what we've been saying tonight is fairly trivial. This is a biggie. One-fourth or some such figure of Canadian children are not healthy enough, well-educated enough, have good enough homes. How can we have adult citizens if we don't raise up the younger generation properly? All the money at the top, we've got a terrible gap between the rich and poor. In economics, it's obvious. You put money at the bottom where the investment will be good. You needed to do it, as you properly pointed out, not just as Rick's people are doing, $400 a family, but see the whole picture. Housing, health, child care. If the mother is single, take care of that. Do things. Put money where it'll build citizens. We want citizens at about 20 years of age, don't we? We're not getting them anymore.
Thank you very much for your questions, and I'm sure there were lots more good ones. Perhaps you might turn out to one of the other forums and have the opportunity to ask a question there. So now we're going to have the closing statements, and again, we will give each candidate 1 minute to give the closing statement. We will go in the reverse order from the opening statements, so that means it will be Rick Casson, Andrea Sheridan, Mark Slingerland, Melanie Thomas, Michael Cormacan, and Howard Forsyth. So Rick Casson first.
Thank you very much, and I want to sit down and do this because I need my glasses to read what I have here, so if you allow me to do that. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, it's pretty clear there's a wide choice of ideas up here to choose from, and we tried best we could tonight to articulate our platforms. But our platform, the platform of the Conservative Party Canada, presents a clear choice for Canadians, a clear choice between old and new, between entitlement and accountability, benefits for a few, and leadership for all. There's only one party that can deliver the change of government that's needed to bring political accountability to Ottawa. And on January 23rd, I'm asking you to vote for the Conservative Party of Canada. Vote for Rick Casson. Thank you.
First they laugh at you, then they ignore you, then they fight you, then you win. This has been the Green Party's mantra for this political election. We are a viable, realistic alternative to the old line parties that have had opportunity after opportunity to make things right in this country and prove they can run a responsible government. Where they have failed, we will not. We are socially responsible and inclusive. We are environmentally sensitive and innovative. We are conservationists and trusted guardians of Canadians' natural wealth. We are prudent and don't like to waste money. We are sound financial managers. First they laugh at you, then they ignore you, then they fight you, then you win. We have survived through the first two stages. We are now heavily embroiled in the third. We are now heavily embroiled in the third. If this election is not ours, the next one surely will be. But why prolong the inevitable? Please vote for the Green Party, January 23rd.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you again all for coming out, and for all of the candidates up here. This is Alberta is a shoe-in province, right? So the fact that these people are willing to take the time and challenge Rick and bring up important issues, I guess I'm sorry that Andrea and I didn't get more chance to speak. I think you've seen what the Liberals and the NDP, the Conservatives, have to offer. You've seen the Liberals and the NDP. They polls can lie, but they seem to be on their way out. The Conservatives are repackaging old Liberal mantras and presenting them again. They're Liberals light. Only the Christian Heritage Party stands for the principles that built Canada, that brought us universities, that brought us health care, that brought the same religious principles that motivated Tommy Douglas to bring in public health care. And only the CHP stands up for those principles that can restore Canada to its rightful place in the world.
Thank you very much for coming this evening. Locally in Lethbridge, we've had conservative representation for 95 years. And to get the change you want, you have to vote for it, which means that if you want change for public health care to stop privatization, if you want change for child care to ensure that your child will have a publicly funded, fully public, early education child care spot, if you want protection for the environment, if you want electoral reform, if you want any of the things that the NDP is talking, you have to vote for it, and you have to vote NDP. It's time for a change, and I personally think that the NDP is on its way in, not on the way out. On January 23rd, I would encourage you to vote for the change that you want. I would encourage you to vote NDP. Thank you.
Michael, you're next.
Thank you very much for coming out tonight. I believe in supporting families by providing programs that make quality child care affordable and universally accessible, supporting families, family caregivers, and enhancing the quality of life for seniors. We must build on the economic achievements of the past decade, ensuring opportunities available to Canadians continue to be enhanced. Our Liberal Party will ensure that our publicly funded health care is universally available and in a more timely manner. Support families, family caregivers, increase financial support to seniors, implement a national child care system, reduce barriers to training and higher education, preserve and protect our environment, implement responsible tax reductions while preserving quality programs. And we support students as well. Just announced last week was the 50-50 to help students. I believe that Canada is a super country, that it is unique in the world in terms of values it represents. If you want if you believe in my values, please vote Liberal on the 23rd.
I can't tell you about parties. I deliberately run as an independent to attack both of the governing parties and try to make them better. It's going to be between those two, but it'll be a minority, so there's plenty of chance for Cadman, you know, with one vote, made a big difference last spring. Well, he was sick and feeble. I'm neither sick nor feeble. I can see a long way in the past, and I can look a long way into the future. With a lifetime of learning, I can study, I can think, I can listen. I can write. Look at what I've written lately, one-page stuff. I can be heard in a crowd, and not everybody here can. I can persuade, and I can innovate.
So check out the SACPA website, www.sacpa.ca, and watch this debate again on Saturday at 3 p.m. on Channel 12. Another big hand for our candidates, please. And make sure you vote.
And it's a great crowd, isn't it?
Yeah.